Bob Sala out. Goodbye. See ya. Pack your bags. Don't even get a chance to respond. See ya, Bob. Off and away you go. 20-36 as a Jet head coach. Officially fired by owner Woody Johnson. Jeff Ulbrich stepping in from defensive coordinator now as the interim head coach. It's Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3 at the City Place Studios in downtown West Palm Beach. My name is Colin Russo. Short across from me is Mike Rizzo, as always, with C-Cat behind the glass on the ones and twos helping us out. The Jets are the story of the day after a terrible loss last week against the Denver Broncos and another ugly loss against the Minnesota Vikings in London. Woody Johnson.
Yep.
Makes the executive decision to fire Robert Saleh from the head coaching spot. And in comes Jeff Ulbrich. And apparently the Jets' problems are all fixed. Wrong. This is reflective of how poorly ran the Jets actually are. Should he have been fired? Yeah. Is it early? Also, yeah. Did they handle it right? No. This has been a disaster from start to finish. And Mike, I wanted to get your take on this because we were talking about how, you know, he's stepping on thin ice.
We could blame it on the hug. He should have never went in on the hug on Aaron Rodgers.
Sure.
I mean, is Rodgers running the show? I think we got our answer. Aaron Rodgers is running the show over there in New York. And I understand, you know, I have the comments that owner Woody Johnson made on the firing of Robert Saleh. Read a little bit here, Colin. This morning, I informed Robert Saleh that he will no longer serve as head coach of the Jets. I thanked him for his hard work these past 3.5 years and wished him and his family nothing but the best moving forward.
That's pretty PR reaction,
I've ever heard one. It's PR, and he also continued to say, I believe now is the best time for us to move in a different direction. This was not an easy decision, but we are not where we should be given our expectations. And Colin, we've talked about how we thought the first 5 games of the year, there's no reason that the Jets probably shouldn't be 4-1, 3-2, or at least a winning record by now. They have one of the easier schedules in the National Football League. And we mentioned yesterday as well, if they win on Monday Night Football against the Bills, they will be in first place. So the Jets, I don't want to say, do you want to say hit the panic button? I mean, they hit the panic button and fired him, and they have a chance to be first in their division after Monday Night Football against a struggling Buffalo Bills team. I was a little shocked this morning.
Well, there's two ways to look at that. Number one is, was this probably the right move? In hindsight, yes, Saleh was not the right guy for the job. That, without a doubt, I think was the impression that most people got. He has not been successful. The team looked unmotivated, unprepared. And despite the defense playing well, you want to give all the credit to Bob Saleh, you're more than welcome to. But the idea that this was a functional football team is just incorrect, just blatantly incorrect. So the idea that this was the right move, I would agree with. I think that this was probably a long time coming. Now, the way in which they handled it, that is where I have a problem. That is where I think that there is an issue. Allegedly, according to Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk, I don't know if this is completely confirmed, but I'm going to do it. Apparently, he wasn't even allowed to inform the team. Mm-hmm. He was escorted out by security.
Yeah, and I have the Pro Football Talk here. Colin says, per multiple sources, Jets coach Robert Saleh was escorted out of the building by the team's director of security after Saleh got the news. Now, this isn't the first time we've heard this. The Pro Football Talk continued to say that the former Browns GM, George Kokinas, was escorted out by security in 2009. But, Colin, my best guess is that tensions got high. Saleh started probably yelling. Now, this is me purely speculating. But I don't, in Saleh's mind, I don't think he got a fair shot at coaching this team this year. That's what happens when you lose like 10-9 at home versus the Broncos and a rookie quarterback. You can't lose that game. We can sit here and argue about the Vikings and the game was close. And by the way, Aaron Rodgers threw a pick six in that game and you lost by 6 points. I just think it's a product of the situation. I told you before the year, I thought something stunk in New York. I thought something was stinky about this Jets team. And they continue to prove that they are a pile of you-know-what right now. That's the best way I could put it. They are a pile of you-know-what right now, and we smelled that stench before the season started. And shocker, Aaron Rodgers is a locker room nightmare. Yeah. Shocker.
He's problematic, and I think that's good. That goes without saying. But the idea that they can't even give the guy a chance to inform the team and you got to get him escorted out by security is the dumbest thing. It's extremely unprofessional. He has had to, through thick and thin, had to defend Zach Wilson when everybody and their mother knew that he was not the answer at quarterback there for 2 years. He had to sit there and talk about how he's our guy and allow Rodgers to do his headlines and this, that, and the other. Then he had to deal with the Hassan Reddick situation, which something he had nothing to do with. There was a major component of that defense that was being inserted, and all of a sudden he doesn't show up. And Saleh is the one who, in a lot of ways, has to answer for it. Because Joe Douglas does not do media availability like Robert Saleh does. So every week he has to answer for Hassan Reddick and the theatrics that goes on behind the scenes between the front office and Hassan Reddick and his agent. So Robert Saleh had to deal with that. And then he has to deal with Aaron Rodgers. The book comes out. Rodgers is this, Rodgers is that. He was in a cave. He decided he wanted to play for the Jets. Rodgers talking about the Pat McAfee show every week, where he either screams wax poetic about whatever's on his mind or he talks about how the head coach doesn't know what he's doing. He has to deal with that. And through the most part, he has a couple bad instances, you know, the offensive cadence thing and this, that, and there's a couple others. But for the most part, he's handled himself fairly professionally. And for the ownership to turn around and unprofessionally let him go, I have a problem with that.
And we know these situations, Colin. We've seen this happen before. He'll talk at some point. You know, he'll talk at some point and kind of open up the curtain for everyone and what it was like to coach Rodgers and work in that building.
It won't be this year. Yeah, it won't be this year.
At some point, he'll open up that curtain. But I want to go back to what owner Woody Johnson of the Jets said about the interim head coach now, Colin, Jeff Albrecht.
Mm-hmm.
Albrecht. He says, Jeff Albrecht will serve as our interim head coach for the remainder of the season. He is a tough coach who has the respect of coaches and players on this team. Do you read into that a little bit? Do you think the players didn't necessarily respect Saleh as the head coach, that the players kind of lost faith in the old gaffer?
I don't think that was a shot. I don't.
You think it was just a PR move?
That's the right thing to say. If that's a shot, then once again, entirely unprofessional. And Woody Johnson has a ton of ties to the UK, so maybe there's a ton of his Jet buddies there, and they lost in embarrassing fashion on Sunday, and maybe that's something to do with
and
it.
I want to remind everybody, too, like, I know it's been the talking point all day is that Saleh was fired. He's a defensive guy, and his defense has actually been pretty good. And it has been, and the numbers show for it. I always think, Colin, in the National Football League, if you hold the team 25 and under, I call it the 25 and under rule. If you hold the National Football League team to 25 points or under, I think it's a pretty good day defensively. That only happened one time this year where they went 25 or more, and that was against the Niners on the road where they couldn't stop the run. The defense hasn't been the problem. It's been the offense. It's been Aaron Rodgers, and it's been the de facto puppet offensive coordinator, Nathaniel Hackett. Of course it's not Aaron Rodgers' fault. Of course it's not his buddy Nathaniel Hackett's fault. It's going to fall on the head coach. You're not going to fire your quarterback. He's under contract. It's Aaron Rodgers. You made your bed with him. Now you lay in it. This is their way of reacting to an awful start of 2-3. Do I think it's fair? Absolutely not. Do I think he probably should have finished out the year? Yes, but I think the Jets realize they're on a clock, Colin.
You're a game away. No, but you're also a game away.
Right.
This is an expedited process. That's.
But doesn't that work more towards Saleh's case of sticking around? Is that they're a game out of first place and you're firing me?
To the flip side, I don't see a future here, but I can't wait and see and then do a due diligence process at the end of the year. Since this might be the last year we get of Aaron Rodgers, which is what Schefter said, earlier today on ESPN Radio, that this might be the last year of Aaron Rodgers. If that's the case, then, and Rodgers is for some reason not in cohesion with the head coach, yeah, you got to get him out of there.
And I also think...
So I understand that. I understand that.
I also think Woody Johnson, the owner, looked at the schedule. You know, home versus the Bills. I know the Bills have been struggling. I still rate them. I think they're a good team. At Pittsburgh, they have an inept offense, but an elite defense with an absolute animal leading the way with TJ Watt. At New England, it's, you know, kind of a dog. And then home versus the Texans. This is their toughest stretch. This is their toughest stretch of the season coming up. So I wonder if he looked at that and said, I need guys that are running the show that have to know what they're doing. And maybe he thought Salah just wasn't the guy for the job. The disconnect between Rodgers and the press conferences, the not hugging, and whatever we want to make of this, something stunk there. And two things. I think it's fair play to make a move. Fair play to the owner to make a move if he felt it wasn't the, you know, obviously the 2-3 start wasn't good enough. But also I feel, I'm kind of a fence sitter on this. I feel for Salah, who's a game out of first place, but I also understand what the owner is doing here. He wants to take advantage of Aaron Rodgers and what could be his last year. But I think everyone is avoiding the biggest problem. And right now the biggest problem is Aaron Rodgers does not look like an elite quarterback. That's the elephant in the room.
And if to get the best out of Rodgers, in his mind, if it was getting rid of the head coach so Rodgers can, you know, play freely, play confidently, whatever it may chalk up to, he is the golden boy that's going to get catered to. And that is the reality of the situation. You are on a clock, like Mike said, with Aaron Rodgers' career at this point, because all of a sudden you're going to be crap out of luck for a quarterback can come 8 months if he decides to retire. So if he's not happy with the head coach and you're going to fire him anyway, this is the year. Get rid of him. I don't disagree with the move. I disagree with the professionalism attached to it. Salah, for the most part, handled himself okay throughout all the dysfunction in the Jets, and a lot of it has to do with the front office.
And he cleaned up their messes. I love the point you made of Douglas doesn't have to talk to the media. Woody Johnson doesn't have to talk to media. Hell, I could argue Aaron Rodgers doesn't necessarily have to be in front of a microphone every day. I know he talks to the media, folks, but you get what I'm saying. The hard-hitting questions usually go to the head coach. I think this is foul play if you're Salah, but I, like I said about the owner,
too. So you want to keep him around for what? They're not playing well.
I just don't think it's his fault. I don't think there's going to be a new head coach Jeff Ulbrich. I don't think that Jeff Ulbrich is going to come in here and wave his magic fairy godmother wand and have Aaron Rodgers play like it's 2020 or 2021.
Now, I think part of it is they offensively, whatever you want to call it as, they haven't been playing with a lot of guts. I think we could agree on that, right?
I agree, and that's why more or less I think it's on Rodgers and it's on Hackett.
Yeah, but also
Hackett is lucky to have a job.
A motivation thing is reflective of the head coach. And handling, you know, making sure the team is motivated and prepared. It's not like Salah was great last year. It's not like he was great the year before. And head coaches are supposed to win games. They're not supposed to have a good one side of the ball. And he didn't.
I just think Rodgers should be held accountable.
I agree, but how are you going to hold him accountable mid-year?
It's a good point.
You got to hold somebody accountable.
And Salah is the one that is being held accountable, but the biggest thing that I don't think Jets fans necessarily, I think Jets fans see it. I think Jets fans see that Aaron Rodgers isn't the Aaron Rodgers that they necessarily traded for.
And I think they're upset with how much of a distraction he is in the locker room.
And you talked about the head coach getting guys ready and motivated. I want to be careful here because I don't want to come out and say Rodgers is a cancer to the locker room. I think that would be unfair of me to say.
Well, they said that when he was on the Packers, so I think
it would be unfair of me to say he's a cancer, but he's certainly a distraction. And I wonder how much motivating and coaching or whatever you want to call it you can do when you have a distraction that is Aaron Rodgers in the locker room. Colin, I don't think this is a Deshaun Watson situation with how bad this trade was in the contract or whatever. But I do think that Jets fans are starting to smell the dumpster a bit. They're starting to smell that, as Mr. Krabs says, that smelly smell that I smelled before the season.
888-760-3776, the number to get into the program. That's 888-760-3776. Who is the cancer here? Has it always been a Robert Saleh problem all the time?
Or
is this more reflective of Aaron Rodgers? Is this just general Jets dysfunction that was lasting way before Saleh and Rodgers got there? Is it all three? Let us know. 888-760-3776. We continue the conversation. Give our reactions to the Chiefs' victory over the Saints on Monday Night Football next. It's Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Bob Saleh out for the Jets. Jeff Ulbrich in. Aaron Rodgers, is he to blame? Is Woody Johnson to blame? Who's the biggest cancer? Is this a mixture of everything? You got three cancers in one locker room with Saleh, Rodgers. You could even include Joe Douglas, Woody Johnson. Is this just a whirlwind, a hurricane of bad ownership, dysfunction, the whole bit?
I love that you call him Bob. I've never heard that. Is that a Jet fan thing?
No.
It's just a you thing.
It's a Robert thing. Robert is a Bob.
Bob Saleh. It's a new one on me.
It's Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3. Christian Catt, Mike Rizzo, Colin Russo. And the number to get into the program, 888-760-3776. We'll talk with Mike Tannenbaum, former Jets GM, in just a few short moments. Next segment. But 888-760-3776, is this a Rodgers problem or was this a Saleh problem? Or if you want to, is this a Woody Johnson problem? Let us know, 888-760-3776. In the meantime, outside of the Jets thing, the Chiefs, once again, last night on Monday Night Football, played, I would throw the word not great, poorly out there, if you will, but they won again. 26-13 final on Monday Night Football on ESPN at home. Mahomes has not been playing well. And the Saints put on no performance. Let's put it that way. But from what I saw yesterday, the Chiefs are just edging their way through the regular season, sneaking wins left and right.
Wait a minute, Colin. What's their record?
5-0.
I think that's all that matters.
They don't care. And you could see it. They don't care how well they play. They don't care about the statistics. They just want to win the games. And when the postseason comes and they're 13-4, they're going to turn it up.
But everyone's saying they need a wide receiver. And then Juju Smith-Schuster goes for, 7-for-130.
The wide receiver is not important to the Chiefs.
Remember the whole last week, the Jets need to trade for Tyreek Hill. The Jets need to trade for Devontae Adams. Juju Smith-Schuster, 7-for-130. And then how about this? Kareem Hunt, 27 carries for a 102 and a touchdown. Kareem Hunt from my neck of the woods, Northeast Ohio.
Great coaching, great organization,
and then
can get the best out of their players. They don't need the star.
And then Mahomes, 331. I understand he had the interception. His season tally, by the way, 6 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, but 331. It's a lot of, Colin, in a league that's struggling for passing yards right now. 331 yards is a lot right now. So he was slinging the rock.
This was a week of offense.
Right.
I don't even think he played that well. Yeah, Mahomes had a couple of plays that makes Mahomes look like Mahomes. And the rest of the game, it's a lot of stagnant, not a lot of methodical drives. It just doesn't look like the Mahomes that dominated the regular season a couple of years ago. But I don't think it matters. I don't think he cares. So people wanting to call fire on Patrick Mahomes and the fall off that is associated with him, forget it. Forget it. You're going to be saying the same thing come February. He is inevitable. That is the problem with them.
A lot of field goals, 4 field goals. I feel like they were really just struggling to get in the end zone. But I got to remind everybody, too, like the Chiefs defense is still the Chiefs defense we saw last year. I know they had a couple of missing pieces. They had a corner.
They lost Snead.
Yeah, they lost the corner. But this is still a really good defense that I thought pestered Derek Carr a lot. Made things tough. 9 quarterback hits in the game. I know they only sacked him one time, but they had 9 quarterback hits in the game and were able to get him off of his footing, off of his game. And I just go back to 331 passing yards for Mahomes. The offense was clicking. They just couldn't punch it into the end zone, and it doesn't really matter when your defense is going to play as stout as it is. I'm a nerd, Colin. I love the early Avengers, Infinity War specifically. that Thanos says, I am inevitable. And that just seems like what the Chiefs are. It's what's going to happen. Like, they're 5-0 and 3-0 at home. You know they're only going to lose two or three games at home and probably lose 4 to 5 games in the regular season and probably get the one seed in the AFC. They're going to have Taylor Swift up in that suite and have home playoff games, and they're probably going to go to the Super Bowl again.
The real question is, who's their challenge in the AFC? Who is that
team?
It's
wide open.
Who is it?
It is so wide open. The Texans? My best guess at this point, I wrote down the best.
Texans were an inch away from losing to Jacksonville a week ago.
And also, I could argue, did not play well in a game against the Bills where Josh Allen went 9 of 30. But the Chiefs 5-0, the Texans 4-1, and then the NFC side for speaking terms, Vikings 5-0, Commanders 4-1. Those are your best teams in the NFL right now.
Well, and the AFC, who is challenging the Chiefs? Who?
It's probably
the Ravens already beat them.
The Bengals, I think, are done. Personally,
probably.
I think the Bengals.
Benito.
I think the Bengals are done. The Bills need to turn things around,
and they already beat the Bengals.
Correct. I'm not. I know the Bills have been struggling, but the Bills and Josh Allen turned things around towards the end of the year. I think the Bills can make a conversation. I think if the Houston Texans keep playing complimentary football, and I think if C.J. Stroud continues not to turn the ball over in crucial moments, I think they're going to be right there too. My two best guesses would be the Texans and the Bills. But to your point, I don't think there's a clear-cut answer, and I think the AFC outside of the Chiefs is as wide open as it's been in years. I'm still, no offense to CCAT, who we'll talk to here in a second, I'm not sold on the Ravens either, just because of the playoff woes. The Ravens are going to have a fantastic regular season. We know this. They're going to win that division with how bad Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, and the Browns have been. Pittsburgh as of late, I know they're 3-2. They've lost two in a row. But I'm not sold on any of these AFC teams
The answer is there's no team. There's none. There's no team in the AFC that could challenge the Chiefs. There's none. And it's unfortunate because there's a fatigue attached to it. And Mahomes, in a lot of ways, Michelle Smallman, just to plug that program on Sportsmanlike in the morning, said that Mahomes doesn't have a rival. That's why there's fatigue. And she's right. There is no rival to Mahomes. There hasn't been since Tom Brady hung him up.
Well, we thought there was going to be this great rivalry with Josh Allen, Joe, all three of them, Allen, Burrow, even Ed Jackson in
Burrow
there.
Burrow, if you want to include that, what has Burrow done? Really? He's beaten him once in the postseason?
Won a trophy?
I can't get into it. I can't. There's nobody that's going to challenge the Chiefs, and they're not even playing that well. But winners know how to win, and they have perfected the art of winning ugly, winning clean, winning gritty, and winning smooth. That is what they have perfected, all arts of winning. Patriots did that. Patriots won ugly. They could win gritty. They could win smooth. They could win high flying. That's what the Chiefs are right now. They've got a bunch of teams that are trying to figure out how to win when they've mastered every art of it.
You bring up the Patriots of old. A lot of similarities between the Patriots, well, at least this current Kansas City team. I think there's a lot of similarities with this current Kansas City team that's defending back-to-back champions and the Patriots of past. Elite defense, elite head coach, elite quarterback, and Colin, a whole bunch of guys at receiver. Let's not forget, I know Wes Welker and Julian Edelman had some good years with Brady, but the only year they had a truly elite wide receiver was the Randy Moss year, where they should have went undefeated, but they didn't have any hardware. But more fuel to my point, a bunch of guys at receiver, an elite defense, elite quarterback, elite head coach. It's the blueprint. It's the blueprint.
They know how to win. There's no challenge to them in the AFC at the moment. There's none.
But would you agree that there are similarities with the Chiefs and the Patriots right now?
I mean, yeah, it's different because they just play different. But in terms of structure, yeah. They got good ownership. They got a good home field advantage. They dominate their division consistently. They know how to win a big game. They can win in all types of facets. The Chiefs can beat you 49-7, or they could beat you 16-13. They know how to win every type of game. They know how to win come from behind. They know how to win keeping a lead and not blowing the game, Kyle Shanahan. They know every facet and every avenue to win a game. It doesn't matter how they play. It doesn't matter if Mahomes is not looking like the Mahomes in 2019 when he had 50 touchdowns. It doesn't matter. They know how to win. And that's what Brady did. People wanted to bash Brady. Oh, he's not as talented as Rodgers. Well, Brady knows how to win more than Rodgers. You're seeing it again. That was always the knock against Brady. The revisionist historians like to say how perfect he was. Brady had a lot of problems in the regular season. and a fair amount of times.
This is a copycat league, and you simply can't copy what the Chiefs are doing, in my opinion.
These quarterbacks have issues, and now you got somebody who is unrivaled in quarterback play. That's the take. Unrivaled. Lamar's not rivaling Mahomes. And Burrow, if you want to include Burrow, Burrow's not even going to see him there.
They're 1-4 this year. It's Allen. Your only hope is in my...
There's no hope. There's none. I'm out.
Can I give a sliver of hope for the NFL fan out there that's tired of the Chiefs? Your only hope in the AFC is Josh Allen.
Yeah, maybe. That's the only thing that has any history with them.
I'm going to take this one step further. I know you're more or less wanting to lock it in the AFC here, Kyle. Is there anybody in the NFC? Is there anybody that could consistently get to a Super Bowl in the NFC? We've seen the San Francisco 49ers get to a Super Bowl, but, you know, like you said, Shanahan, blowing games, problems. Can the Lions rival them? Can the...
That's where you get to the yeses. There's a couple teams in the NFC that
are we sure?
Probably, yeah.
I don't know. The point is,
they haven't played that great. They play better than the rest of the AFC.
Where I was going with that, Colin, is I don't know if another quarterback or team can rival the Chiefs in the NFC. I thought the best chance people had last year was that San Francisco team, just because it's Shanahan. And I know we've kind of debunked the whole Shanahan thing the last couple of shows here. But the Shanahan factor, the defense factor, the running the football factor, like I thought it was the perfect storm against Kansas City in that Super Bowl last year, and they lost in OT.
Yeah. 888-760-3776. That's the number to get into the program. 888-760-3776. Do we have somebody on the line here, CK?
Yeah, Ryan in West Palm Beach.
Ryan in West Palm Beach joins the program. Ryan, what's on your mind? What's going on?
Russo, when I heard that you had your own show, you know, because I'm a huge fan of your father's, and, you know, I click over here, and I'm a big Chiefs fan. And every time I listen to you talk, you keep saying the Chiefs don't play well. They don't play well. They're not winning. They're not winning big. They're not doing. What do you want? What do you want from us? You know, we go out there and we just win.
You're sitting there.
And you talk about all right.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. You're on that white horse, saying you guys are 5-0. I understand that, but you haven't. You thought yesterday was pretty.
Well, I mean, what do you expect? It's a David Carr team. A Carr team, he's going to turn it over. We're going to run the ball, and we're just going to dink and dunk it, just like Brady did for 20 years. And we're just going to end up winning.
Would you agree? Yeah.
Obviously, we're not going to – Mahomes isn't going to throw, you know, 30, 45 touchdowns like he did because we don't have any wide receivers. I mean, we have a great defense. Just lean on the defense.
I don't disagree.
I mean, that's how we're going to play now.
I don't disagree. Now, do you think there's a rival in any sense from a Chiefs fan perspective? I'll leave it to the NFL, but also in the AFC.
Well, you mentioned the Bills, and then I thought to myself, you know, it could have been Josh Allen, but Mahomes never went 9-for-30 on the road and lost like the Bills did on Sunday. Mm-hmm. It could have been Burrow because their defensive coach is a genius and he owns Mahomes, but they always seem to screw up, you know, when it matters. And you brought up Shanahan, but Purdy is still Purdy. He can't, he still can't show up when it comes up, you know, when it's clutch time.
And you're not afraid of the Lions?
I can't really think of it. No, I'm not afraid of the Lions. Are you? Who would be afraid of the Lions? I mean, you get Goff outside of Detroit.
I'll say this. I'm with him on the Goff thing. Okay. You know I am.
I appreciate the call, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
From West Palm joining in. I mean,
Colin, he does have a point. Like,
he's done it in two places.
Are we nitpicking?
Hold on. He's done it in two places. He's done it in two places, Goff. I understand Goff is not the prettiest quarterback in the world, but in terms of roster construction, he's done it in the Rams. He's doing it with the Lions, and they're with a first-time head coach.
But you're not scared of him.
You don't need to be scared of him. He needs to win.
I don't look at it and go, oh man, you better look out for Goff.
There have been non-scary quarterbacks who have won Super Bowls.
Trent Dilfer?
I guess. I mean,
that's the best one I could come up with.
Yeah. I mean, Foles. Like,
hang on. You're the one who talks about magic and mojo. And was magic and mojo right there.
And can the Lions harness that? Are they the prince that was promised?
But I am with Ryan in a sense of, man, we really are nitpicking the Chiefs, aren't we? That guy had a point. I mean, they're 5-0. They're back-to-back champs. And if I was a betting man, if I was going to the Hard Rock Bet app, C-Cat, I'm putting it, the only bet I would place would be the Chiefs right now. That would be the only bet I would place would be the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah. This is what they do. We're going to talk to Mike Tannenbaum, former executive vice president of football operations for the Dolphins, former general manager of the New York Jets, and current ESPN NFL insider in just a few short moments. It's Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3. You heard it right there. Hard Rock Bet. It's now legal in Florida. It's Florida's only legal sports book. You've now seen the first few weeks of football play out. It's time to try your first bet on Hard Rock Bet. Each game you can bet on the touchdown scores, passing yards, other stats, total points, who will win, so much more on Hard Rock Bet. You can also bet on college football. You can bet on the MLB, the divisional series going on each series at 1-1. There's a ton going on there. If you don't want to bet a ton of money, you could try a parlay. In week one, a Florida bettor went 16 for 16 in all their picks in a parlay, turned $15 into $104,000. They did that on Hard Rock Bet. You can too. All you got to do is get started today. If you're not sure what to bet, Hard Rock Bet has their Discover page, which is the trendy picks, the promo picks, the great parlays. They give you a visual component. Hard Rock Bet is so well organized for the new player. It is also perfectly laid out for the experienced player who wants a little more sophistication. They got it all covered on Hard Rock Bet. Get started today. Download Hard Rock Bet on the App Store or Google Play Store or go online to hardrock.bet. Try today once again and get up to $100 back in bonus bets if your first bet does not pan out. Your first bet can be a parlay, prop, the over, whatever you like to bet. You could do it with that first one. You need to either win your first bet or you get the same amount back paid as a bonus bet. Get Hard Rock Bet today. It's offered by the Seminole Tribe of Florida. Must be 21 plus, physically present in Florida to wager. Terms and conditions apply. Concerned about gambling, call 1-888-ADMIT-IT. Don't go anywhere. Speaking with Mike Tannenbaum coming up next on Russo and Rizzo live here, ESPN 106.3.
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Rolling on here, Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3. Story of the day, of course, being Robert Saleh out as Jets head coach. Fired by Woody Johnson. It was an owner-only the decision. You haven't heard much from Joe Douglas. But Jeff Ulbrich stepping in as interim instead of Nathaniel Hackett. The Jets have a longer week and play the Bills on Monday Night Football next week. Joined now by former GM of the aforementioned Jets, former executive vice president of football operations for the Miami Dolphins, and current ESPN NFL insider Mike Tannenbaum joining us now. Mike, what's going on? How you doing?
Doing, Mike.
Good afternoon, guys. What a day.
What a day indeed. Right. We'll start with the elephant in the room. Rob Saleh gets out here. Mike, this is not necessarily a surprise that he was fired. I think the timing of it was, from your perspective, and you have expertise in sort of how these things are handled, this early in the year, is this a panic move, or is this because the clock's ticking on Rodgers and we need to get the best out of this team right now? What is really the baseline of firing him this quickly into the season?
Yeah, I was part of firing Joe Philbin and hiring Dan Campbell. That was after four games, and we just felt like we could do better. And Dan Campbell was a rising coaching star and did a great job for us. And then I think in a situation like this, it's very similar where if they win Monday night, they're in first place. It's a lot of the season left to be played, and after being 20-36, guys, like. It's. I don't think it was the wrong decision, just given there was a long body of work and obviously back to back disappointing games, both Denver and Minnesota.
Mike, what's your take on people out there saying the defense played well and he handles the defense and it's Rodgers and Hackett on offense?
Yeah, I don't think that's the way you define the job. I think you have to be the chief strategist. And look, I hate criticizing somebody that just got fired, and I'm not second guessing. I'm first guessing, but. I just don't think he had the team prepared. I would have played Aaron Rodgers in the preseason and said, hey, look, right now, Breece Hall and, Braylon Allen give us a better chance to win. Let's throw it 15, 20 times a game. And by November, December, we could be hitting our stride. And, he's the CEO. He has to be the strategist in addition to what he's doing on defense.
How do you think the ownership handled it? It seemingly was an executive decision from coming up top. And your experience with, of course, owners that, you know, can sort of step in and executive decision out everybody else. It seemingly that was the decision-making process here coming from up top. Do you think it reflects poorly on them and how this is handled and allegedly, you know, not being able to inform the team himself and the whole bit? What's your takeaway on that?
You know, I've been part of, you know, very tough conversations in my career. And as you know, been on, you know, both ends of those conversations, guys. It's never easy. You know, I had a chance to address the team after I was let go in New York. It was meaningful. You know, I still have great relationships with people both in Miami and New York. That's what's great about this business is, you know, the relationships you can create. I'm sure he's talking to, you know, a whole bunch of people in the building. Maybe he didn't get a chance to formally do it, but I'm not defending how things went down. Obviously, I wasn't there. But what I can say is, you know, there's no easy way to do it.
Can they turn this around, Mike?
Oh, boy. You know, Aaron Rodgers looked pretty old to me, to be candid.
Right.
I think they have to adjust how they look at playing the game. This is not Aaron Rodgers at Green Bay. Like, that's a lifetime ago. That doesn't mean they still can't win. But I want to see them come out in three tight ends and throw it. I want to see them come out in four wides and run it. I just, you know, I want to see some creativeness on the offense and say, like, this is not a plug and play, you know, Aaron Rodgers defense. The division is certainly, I don't know, kind of interesting right now. You know, Miami had a big win, but New England's rebuilding. I don't know. I think they certainly, I certainly think they can. We got a long way to go.
Shifting gears a little bit, but staying in the AFC, Mike Tannenbaum, ESPN NFL Insider, joining us now on Russo and Rizzo. We saw yesterday the Chiefs can kind of win in any facet of the game. They could win ugly. They could win clean. They could win gritty. They sort of mastered it in kind of playing into their defense a little bit. You know, the other in terms of record, the Texans are the ones that kind of stand in the way in terms of a comparison, but they haven't necessarily won that clean either, and they're more unproven. Is there anybody in the AFC that could really rival the Chiefs here? Are they going to be challenged, or is it this going to be where there's so much flaw elsewhere in the AFC and sometimes in the NFL that this is sort of the Chiefs to run away with?
Yeah, I think Cincinnati and Baltimore can go in and beat them. You know, look, I know that sounds a little bit crazy given what's going on with, you know, Cincinnati's record guys, but I really think they their A game is still really, really hard to beat because of the upside of Burrow, Higgins, and Chase. And right now, you know, Baltimore can run the ball, guys. They could stop the run. So I think those are two teams that if they have their A game, they have a chance to win.
Mike, how long do you think Andy Reid can do this for? We talked earlier about how I just think the quarterback, the head coach, the defense, the way this Chiefs team is playing reminds me a little bit of the Patriots, you know, not really a big name at receiver. They win with defense. They win with playing smart. They run the football. How long do you think Andy Reid can do this?
Yeah, I think a while, but I think the other interesting question off of that, to be candid, is can they win without Andy Reid?
Right.
And I think the answer is yes. You know, is it Spags, the head coach? Is it Matt Nagy? I think you have, you know, when you talk to people around the league, I think one of the reasons they're so successful, guys, is Patrick Mahomes wants to be coached really hard. That's a competitive advantage. You're seeing all these other quarterbacks not want to be even playing in the preseason. He wants to be great. That really adds up over time, guys. Like, that gives them a huge advantage.
We know how much talent San Francisco has, and, you know, they're dealing with a bit of an injury bug, you know, contract disputes, aging players. You could go down the list in terms of the things that have been distractions for San Francisco. But the bottom line is they haven't been able to close a game. And I think the underlying theme there with multiple quarterbacks now is Kyle Shanahan has consistently shown an inability to stay ahead in games. And whether it be in the Super Bowl setting or in a conference title game or even the two of the last three games against the Rams, against the Cardinals, and even if you want to go back to Atlanta, his days there, we all know what happened there. This, to me, is a recurring theme. It's an ugly pattern when it comes to Kyle Shanahan, but I want to ask you the question and kind of present the idea that is maybe the walls shrinking in on San Francisco and what they could possibly accomplish with this team, and how do you think this reflects on Shanahan?
Yeah, I don't think so at all. I think this is a team that's, you know, really doing a great job of winning games. Right now, creatively, you know, given no McCaffrey and, you know, a litany of other injuries from, you know, Trent Williams to you know, certainly on the other side of the ball. So some of that Kyle Shanahan criticism to me is a little outdated. Now, look, we'll see who steps up in that division. Seattle goes from 3-0 to 3-2. We have a long way to go, but I think, again, like Cincinnati and Baltimore, if and when San Francisco gets healthy, I think their A game is as good as anybody's in the NFC.
Sticking with San Francisco, Mike, are you a Brock Purdy supporter, I guess, or is that just more or less a system thing going on there?
No, I am. Look, I think he's accurate. I think he's, you know, very, has great anticipation. I think he plays quick. He's not a frontline athlete, but I think he's a good NFL quarterback, probably top 10 to 12, not top 8. But you can win a lot of games with those players. Like, I think he'll have a sort of like similar career guys to me, like to someone like Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, and Cousins, I think to this point, has unquestionably had a fairly successful career, and he already has more playoff success than Cousins to this point. Patriots, another story now recently. It's been announced that Drake May is going to be starting this coming game against the Texans, out with Jacoby Brissett after that god-awful game against the Dolphins on Sunday, where neither team could get anything done here. Going with the strategy of letting May kind of get his bearings a little bit a couple games into the year, is this the right move at this point in time? You think that's five, six, seven weeks period of nope, not playing and letting him kind of establish himself? Do you think that's beneficial here? What's your takeaway with what's going on that now that May is under center for the Patriots?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, guys, let's like go through this, you know, autopsy here. You have a new head coach, you know, some questionable play calling decisions, in my opinion. You know, they could have kicked the field goal on 4th and 10, made it 15-13, mm-hmm. and still have 3 timeouts, but you have a new play caller in Van Pelt. So to me, you know, if I'm running the Patriots, let, you know, Mayo get settled in, let Van Pelt get settled in. And I think Drake May has a chance to be really good. I think he's an underrated athlete. I think he could have a Ben Roethlisberger type of career. So, hey, we want him to be great for the next 10 years, not the next, you know, 10 minutes. So I think by waiting the way they did was really smart.
Mike, what was the biggest thing that stood out to you over the NFL weekend?
Great question. I mean, there were so many weird touchdowns that happened. You know, it was just one of those weeks. You know, you look at that Denver game against the Raiders, obviously Seattle and the Giants. But I thought what Dallas did Sunday night, they were missing 47% of their pressure players between DeMarcus Lawrence and Micah Parsons. They lost their left tackle in Guyton. Marshawn Nealon goes out with a cartilage issue, and they still win the game. I think that says a lot about Dallas's depth. And look, I don't know if they're as talented as they were a year ago, guys, but I think when it's all said and done, Dallas will still be one of the 7 best teams in the NFC.
Mike, I also want to selfishly ask you, as a Cleveland Brown fan, being from Cleveland, what would you do in that situation right now with Watson and what's going on there?
Well, did you hear what our ESPN radio teammate Evan Cohen suggested today?
With the trading him to the Panthers and just having them eat the cap for a bunch of draft picks?
Yeah, so it's really an interesting idea. Like, what you could do is say, like, hey, look, you know, it's not going to work here, so we're going to trade, you know, Deshaun Watson and 2 first-round picks to the Panthers and basically, you know, let them eat $92 million, and they could either give, you know, Deshaun Watson a shot and see if he can work it, need a quarterback at some point, and we'll go out and go get, you know, the Joe Flaccos of the world. We made the playoffs a year ago, and, you know, it's just not working here. So we'll basically, you know, try to buy by giving up picks, you know, we're going to buy a way out of this contract.
But Mike, we need picks. That's the only thing that could possibly save us. I could argue draft picks are the most important thing to an NFL franchise, specifically when you're a quarterback-hungry team, and maybe Jimmy and whoever's running the show over there doesn't want to admit it, but they need a quarterback.
Right, but you also have a $92 million, you know, albatross.
He's got it, Mike. He's got it. Right. He's got it. If you can tell, I'm very frustrated with the situation going on over there. The Browns were a top 10 offense with Flacco last year.
Well, what do you want them to do?
And then they tinker and talk. I want them to bench him. I want them to end this nightmare that's going on right now and pretend like you want to win games and stop pretending like you're trying to win a contract. They're trying to prove to everybody, Mike, that the contract isn't a disaster, and anyone with eyes can see it's a disaster.
Well, that's what Evan's idea was, to cut your losses and move on. And the only way a team would ever consider that, let alone, you know, the PR issue and all the other things that go along with Deshaun Watson, is you have to give up multiple picks. And then if you're the acquiring team, you have to say, like, hey, you know, maybe we could, you know, get Deshaun Watson to be our Joe Flacco and be a Band-Aid and maybe change the scenery. We could salvage something. So if not, what you're going to have is you're going to have Watson on your roster and you still have $92 million additional dollars that are going to hit your cap in 2025 and 2026.
Yeah, it's a logistical nightmare. PR disaster as well. I don't think there's a clean mark on where this can go for the Browns, whether either they're going to pay up on the contractual end of things, or they're going to pay up on the draft ends of things, or they're going to pay up on the win columns of things. So there doesn't seem like there's a proper way that they could really handle this.
Worst contract in NFL history, right, Mike?
It's in that conversation for sure. You know, like, it's sort of, you know, but look, they went to the playoffs last year. Let's give them that credit.
With Flacco, with my guy Big Bird, with Joe Flacco. Wish he was still here.
And look, he's not been bad for, I mean, if you said to Shane Steichen right now, you have one job for your life, are you going to put in Anthony Richardson or Joe Flacco? I think that's probably a pretty easy decision for Shane Steichen right now.
I would agree with that, Mike. Last thing before we let you go here, how about Denver? What's the read on that Denver from your perspective? I think they're solid and they're pesky and a good, well coached. What's your takeaway on what you see for the Broncos at 3-2?
I love all those words, and you know, I think that's a good testament. You know, there's a lot of criticism of, hey, did the Jets overreact? And I would say, no, they didn't, because, again, Saleh was 20-36. I think the opposite end of that is, let's give, you know, Sean Payton and Vance Joseph credit. They lost to a Miami Dolphins team last year by giving up 70 points, and I'm sure there were a lot of hard conversations, but no one blinked. And now you have Vance Joseph arguably doing as good a job as maybe Brian Flores as defensive coordinators. It's a very well-coached team. They have a great secondary led by Patrick Surtain. And they have a quarterback that, to me, may not have the upside of Daniels or Caleb Williams, but I think, you know, when you look at it, Bo Nix, he can have a really good NFL career. I don't know if it'll be great, but, you know, they're going to be well-coached. They're going to run the ball. They have a decent offensive line. And I don't know if they'll be in the top seven, but I think their arrow is up. And let's credit them for what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball.
Mike, Colin and I's first hurricane. Any suggestions for us, partner?
Yeah, stay safe, my friends. It's look, we're on the East Coast here. We know, like, we should be okay. But boy, it's crazy. I mean, that, yeah, I'm no meteorologist, but that looks like one bad storm.
Yeah, it sure does. Mike, I appreciate you joining us as always. Thanks for the short notice. Great insight as always. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, guys. Thank you.
You got it. That's Mike Tannenbaum, current ESPN NFL insider, former general manager of the New York Jets, former executive vice president of football operations for the Dolphins. Said a couple interesting things there. He is in on what Denver's doing. He is in on what the Chiefs are doing, of course. But he thinks that the Evan Cohen idea of trading Deshaun Watson
ridiculous
for picks.
You need your picks. You just, Colin,
need your picks for what?
Colin, to draft a quarterback, to draft a team.
So then, these guys are aging. I think it's a matter of they're going to let $50 million sit on the bench each year. They can't sign any free agents with that, and they're already paying so many guys on the team. They're trying to think, let's free $100 million or have the eighth overall pick in the draft. That's what they're thinking.
I think you have to, the one thing Brown fans are struggling with, it didn't work. Your window's over. It's time to restart.
So you want to blow it all up?
I'd hang on to Garrett. I'd hang on to Ward. Anyone not named Myles Garrett or Denzel Ward can go.
Owusu Koramoah.
He could go.
What?
He could go. He's not. He plays a linebacker position, which I don't think is. I think you could find a lot of jocks out there.
I don't. I think Jock is awesome.
I think you could find.
He's a headhunter.
I think you could find jocks out there. You can't find Myles Garrett.
So you want to blow this all up?
Besides, if you're not named Myles Garrett or Denzel Ward, and by the way, they're under contract, so they don't necessarily have a choice unless they force their ways out, which could happen if you blow it up. But Colin, read the room. Like, I don't want to say read the room. That's the wrong thing. But like, you know that this thing is a nightmare. You know you're not winning games this year.
Is the nightmare stemming from one person? Because they were 11-6 last year.
Yes.
Okay, so let me follow this up. If there's one person at fault here and there's one person that's making the storm go around, then if you could get rid of that one person and rid this team of this cancer for two picks, you're not considering it?
I think you need your first. And I think what people forget too, Colin, is that the Browns, I keep saying we, I apologize for that, folks. The Browns haven't had their first round picks for about 3 years now because of said person. I got to trade this guy.
I don't think it'd be two first rounders. I guess that was the wrong answer.
I understand what you and Mike T are saying. Maybe I just don't understand the cap as well as I probably should. But I can't, for the life of me, I can't fathom giving up more picks after not having first round picks for 3 years.
I understand it's not a pretty situation by any means, but if you're talking about a win now roster, having a great roster, all I've heard this year is about how great this roster is outside of Deshaun Watson. If there's one problem that needs to be addressed and it's him, are you going to pay the price to get rid of him? Now, do I think it'll be two first rounders? I don't think that would be the case, but you know, it probably might be a future first and a third. It might be a future first or might be future second and a third.
This is something they have to just wear. They have to take it on the chin, man. It failed. It's one of the Mike T wouldn't necessarily go there with me, but from what I heard, he sounds like he agrees with me in a sense that this is the worst contract in NFL history.
Yeah, it's bad, but if there's a way to you know cut off the limb that's infected, and like I don't know, I don't not see it. I see the vision there. But is it worth the price? That's the real question with the Browns. Is it worth the price? Paying money to get rid of him and get out of that contractual nightmare. We'll invite Christian Catt, our producer, into the program after this. But first, I got to tell you what I do in the mornings. I go over to F45 at West Palm Beach in the downtown area. It's group setting workouts. It's a social vibe of workouts. You have two coaches with you. Hour, 45 minutes type of in and out. Type of environment. You do functional movements. It's not necessarily the Olympic lifts that you do by yourself in the gym, but it's more group setting. It's more motivating by the people next to you. It's more getting insights from the experienced coaches that F45 has to offer. They have it in Wellington. They have it in downtown. They have it over in Palm Beach Gardens. F45 is the place to be. If you want to get a sweat going, I do it every morning, and it's a great way to kickstart my day with a win. I do it at F45. Go check out their Instagram, F45 West Palm Beach. We'll invite Christian Catt into the program, do a little 5 and 5 next at Russo and Rizzo Live here, ESPN 106.3.